Produced at the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon, this is Free Culture Radio. Free Culture Radio neither promotes the use of any drugs nor condemns people for being involved in drugs. To the extent that drug use presents problems for individuals or society, those problems are made worse and more intractable when people who use drugs are treated as others and ignored, stigmatized, and even brutalized. In this edition of Free Culture Radio, we're going to talk about one of the world's most widely used drugs. It would be hard to overstate the impact that this substance and the culture surrounding it has had on nations and peoples around the world. It's even played a part in wars. Not surprising, really, it's been an important commodity in international trade for centuries. If you haven't already guessed, I'm referring to tea. Lately, it's become my drug of choice. Thing is, I'm a total novice. So I sat down recently with Virinda Chavla from the Tao of Tea in Portland, Oregon, to enjoy a cuppa and learn about this wonderful beverage.
I'm Virinda Chavla. I'm a tea lover and a founder of the Tao of Tea here in Portland, Oregon.
How did you first get into tea?
Well, it was a stroke of luck. I was in the midst of a career change. I used to be helping large organizations in the United States in making good, wise decisions in energy consumption in the early 1990s. And I guess I discovered early on that I was a bit ahead of the of my time, which was that I was trying to sell the idea of being more green and more conscious about energy consumption before that consciousness actually came. And so I was in the midst of a career change to look for something else. And in the mid 90s, I decided to open a small little tea house in Southeast Portland and to dabble with learning about tea from a consumption perspective, but more importantly, to learn about tea from the origin perspective of learning it by traveling to the different origins and making relationships and seeing how this traditional ancient art form of a beverage has evolved over the years. So the travels really inspired me to go deeper and deeper, and I'm still, after doing this for about 24 years, still as interested and enthused about learning about tea.
I have only recently started to get interested in tea and the varieties. Full disclosure, I'm hooked. But I'm just starting to learn about it, and it's one of the reasons I'm really excited to have you on the show. So let's get some basic stuff. I never thought about how tea was made. I guess I assumed that they just pick leaves off a plant and dry them and then put them in bags. But there's a little more to it than that, right?
No, from a very basic, high-level perspective, it's no more difficult than growing your leaves and then taking them through a little bit of a process. And in some cases, the process is very minimal. But yes, that's from a very high level, 20,000 feet above perspective. From a micro perspective, it does become a true art form to work with the leaves, to really get to know them, and then to appreciate the environment and the terroir that they are growing within to bring out the flavor of that region. And so when we start thinking about varieties, from a academic perspective, it's quite easy to understand them and denote them by color or by shape of the leaf or by grading of the size of the leaf. That's a very simple technical method. The way I think about varieties of tea is actually by the origin or the terroir that they come from. So, for example, if I'm drinking a tea that has been grown in Darjeeling in Northeast India, when I sip that tea, it transports me to that particular region and the environment and the experience I had on visiting that region. So drinking tea for me is not as academically or technically important. It's more that I transport myself to that region and I want to experience the air and the smells of that region that I can experience through drinking tea.
So what's your favorite cuppa? What do you like?
It depends on the freshness. So tea, you know, okay, let me backtrack a little bit. So when we talk about tea, one way that I think about tea, and I like to educate my customers and interested people, is it's not chamomile, it's not peppermint, it's not ginger. Those are herbs or roots that we drink and we make as tea, but they're not from the tea plant. So tea is what originates from the tea plant, which is Camellia sinensis. And there are many, many, many cultivars and varieties of tea. So what's my favorite is what is tasting fresh for the season, because tea is produced at different times of the year based on the origin. I'll use an analogy that, if you like fruit and you like peaches, you know that if you're buying peaches in December, they're either frozen or they're from a region that is not very well known here in the United States, because peaches are delicious during the summertime, especially from Georgia. So the first question that I ask when I'm trying to find a tea or buy tea is, how fresh is it? When was it made? And this time of the year, for example, in January, most origins are dormant. Very few origins are producing tea at this time. But come March, the plants start to awaken. And there's a whole plethora of different kinds of teas that are fresh starting in March. So today I'm drinking actually a green tea from Taiwan. It's called Baozhong. It comes from the northernmost part of Taiwan, up in the mountains. It's light green tea that's made in the wintertime also, but a very, very small production because the plants grow very slowly in wintertime. So my favorite changes by the season, to give you a long answer for, I'm sorry to take so much time, but it's a long answer to a simple question.
See, it's fascinating. Even as something as simple as that, the Camellia sinensis plant, the source of the black teas and the green teas, they look so different, they taste so different, and yet they're the same plant.
So think about roses. We have so many kinds of the flower roses. You have red roses, white roses, yellow roses. They vary in their shape. They vary in terms of their character, in their ability to be a climber rose, or it's a ground spreading rose, or it's a floribunda, or it's a singular rose. They also have different aromas, but they're all rose. Similarly, think about grapes or apples. You have so many kinds of apples. They're all apples, but you have a Honeycrisp apple. You have a Red Delicious apple from Washington State. You've got Fuji, Gala, Golden. You have so many different kinds of apples that taste all different, but they're all apples. So tea, even if it's green tea or black tea or oolong tea, it's like saying you're eating apples, but then the next question is, what kind of green tea? And what's the flavor of that green tea? And what origin is it from? And when was it grown? So It has the same analogy as most other produce that we eat.
What makes, for instance, a green tea a green tea?
A good way, high-level understanding of processing of tea is that once the tea leaves are plucked, they have to be processed some way or form. The hand processing methods are the small percentage in today's date, but they are still the more prized way of making tea is using old traditional hand-making methods. So the leaves have to be processed. And when I say processed, I mean that they have to be perhaps rolled or bruised. And when you bruise tea leaves, that's when you allow oxygen to come into the internal chemistry of the leaf. And what we as tea people say, the term we use is oxidation starts. It's similar to thinking about that apple. When you cut an apple, and you leave the cut apple on your in your kitchen for, let's say, half a day, that apple is going to turn brown. What's happening to the apple is it's oxidizing. When oxygen is reacting to the internal chemistry of the apple, it's changing its constituency. So for tea leaves, the same happens. Once you bruise the leaves, that's when you have started the oxidation process. And if you let the tea leaf sit for a long period of time, meaning a day to 2 days at the max, you can turn that green tea leaf to a darker looking black tea category. So to answer your question, how do you make green tea? You don't take it through this oxidation process too much. You do the oxidation for some of the other categories of tea, which is oolong tea or black tea or pu'er tea. But for green tea, you minimize the oxidation. And theoretically, yes, you can make different kinds of categories of tea from the same plant, but that's not how it happens at the farm level. By that, what I mean to say is that farms and gardens over time have specialized into what they make the best. So for example, if you go to the area of Darjeeling in India that I spoke about earlier, they typically make black tea or light black tea in that area. Even though they can make green tea and they can make oolong style of tea, but if you're a oolong drinker or a green tea drinker, what you'll find being made out of, let's say, areas in Japan or areas in Vietnam or areas in China is that you'll find better tasting or more experienced green tea making makers from those regions. So over the years, farms or farmers have become more and more focused as to what they do best. Another analogy would be, let's look at our Willamette Valley winemakers. We are in Oregon known for our Pinot Noir, even though conceptually all other kinds of grapes and other kinds of wine can be made, and some vineyards do make different kinds of wine here in the Willamette Valley. But we are best known in Oregon for our Pinot Noir, just as Bordeaux is known for its own way of making wine. So hope that is helpful. Yeah.
Oh, this is, like I say, this is really fascinating stuff. It's the flavors are so different. And although the processing is minimal, there is that little bit of processing that makes all the difference. I mean,
it's the processing, but it's also the cultivar or the leaf itself. So for example, the tea plants that are growing in Shizuoka or Okabe in Japan are different in their texture and in their character than the green tea plants growing in, let's say, Huangshan Mountains in China, or the plants growing in Taiwan. you could transplant that same cultivar from one region to the next, but you will still not get the same character because of the environment and the terroir of that new region. So yes, we can think about tea as a singular plant, but what I'm trying to share is that it's not at the ground level, that's not how tea people think about tea plants. Tea people think about their plants as being specific to their origin and their area, and they differ in their character from area to area, even though they are all within the green tea category, for example.
This is a conversation with Virendra Chawla from the Tao of Tea. You're listening to Free Culture Radio. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. One variety that I've heard of that I've not tried yet, you mentioned a moment ago, and that's the oolong. What is oolong tea?
They are delicious category of teas, and probably a category that is still not well understood or appreciated here in the U.S., just because we don't see it growing in our backyards and we don't have places we can go visit easily to see how it's made. But it's sometimes people will describe it as in between green and black, but that's not the real way to describe it or the correct way to describe it. It's its own category where the processing of the leaf undergoes a lot of rolling and roasting techniques. So a lot of people have seen how coffee is roasted in a tunnel roaster. You know, tea leaves in many cases are also roasted, and in oolong roasting techniques, it's also a tunnel roaster similar to coffee. But unlike the coffee beans, where you have put the beans in and you let them roast till the desired crack happens or the desired pop happens of the beans and the color emerges and so forth, in oolong tea making, you have several iterations of roasting the leaves, bringing them out of the roaster and rolling them, putting them back in the roaster, roasting for a longer time, bringing them out again and rolling them. So it's an iteration of different movements of the leaf. The famous areas for oolong are Taiwan and Fujian areas in China. That's where the oolongs originated. And the flavor profiles go anywhere from being very floral, lighter green characteristic, to dark, roasted, caramelly, honey, nutty, dark. When I say dark, almost as dark as some coffee, if it's a highly roasted type of an oolong. But one thing that's common amongst many oolongs is that the texture of the brew is very smooth and not as acidic as perhaps some black teas, and definitely not as acidic as coffee. So it's certainly a category of teas, if you aren't familiar with, is to try and get some green oolongs and get some dark oolongs and do your own tasting to see if it fits your profile, your taste profile.
That interests me especially. I think it's the acidic quality of some teas that possibly I'm oversteeping. I don't know what it is. It just seemed too strong for me.
The green oolongs will give you flavor profiles like gardenia or lilies, like stargazer lilies or orchids. On the greener side, and on the darker side, you can have this really smooth, velvety, roasted peanut like character to some of the oolongs.
There's another one I want to ask you about. That's can you tell me about pu'er?
Yeah, so pu'er is an old category of tea originating from southern China, especially in the region of Yunnan, which is right above Thailand and is neighboring to Myanmar and Laos. So that region is sometimes credited to be the area known for the genesis of tea, where some of the oldest tea plants in the world still exist. There still are like tea forests that have tea plants that are like 1,000 years old. There are very few forests that still remain, but it's akin to like being the redwoods of the tea industry. And I've been to some of those tea forests and walked through them. The natives of that region, since it's the genesis of the tea, that origin, you may have heard of the old tea horse road that originated at the same time as the spice route from China into Tibet, into India, and then through the Middle East into Europe. So tea used to be also transported from that region all the way into Europe. And along the way, in that journey, it would pick up all these aromas and character of the journey. And so to transport tea, one of the forms that tea making took was to be compressed into small cake, round cakes or brick form, so that it's easier to transport. Now, the shape is not necessarily what characterizes pu'er. Pu'er is, over the years, become a way of making tea. It's a family of teas where the leaf, somehow from that region, is known to have this character to, it's not fermentation. Fermentation would be the wrong word here. It's natural oxidation that the leaves are naturally, they have that character in them. So if you take the leaves through a process which is very similar to what we do in composting, we pile, you know, produce grounds into a little mound, and we go through a composting process over a month or 2 months and make it into manure. In tea, there is a version known as the Vaudois style, which is like a 90-day process of taking tea leaves into making them into mounds and composting the tea leaves into a character which is dark and very, very smooth. But it also brings a character of earthiness, like it's very, very earthy. It eliminates all the acidity in the leaf. So you could take pu'er leaves and put them into your thermos in the evening and add hot water and wake up in the morning, and it's just the perfect brew for the morning. It's a perfect morning cuppa for the morning. It doesn't take on any acidity at all. Now, the Vaudois style is what people do to give it that character over 2 or 3 months when they're making it. However, if you are able to source tea from those old tea forests that I was talking about, there is also a segment in the tea industry which comprises of collecting tea harvests from those regions over the years. For example, I personally have tea cakes and bricks that are about 20 years old that I have brought from some of those forests myself, and I still have them, and they're still aging. I'm still aging them. They're still gaining character over the years, and I break a little bit off of the cakes once in a while to see how it's doing. And so they are tea connoisseurs, they are tea people, tea lovers who collect pu'ers from different origins. And you have in the category of pu'ers bricks or cakes that can be as old as 50 years old, 60 years old, 70 years old. Hard to find, not easy to find, but they're certainly out there. It's similar to wine. You have wine that was made in, let's say, 10 years ago, and it's still aging, and the vineyard is recommending that you should wait another year or two before it's intended to peak. So it's a large universe within the tea universe of pu'ers. And if you get into pu'ers, I can certainly say it's extremely fun. I still haven't discovered all the different kinds of pu'ers that are out there. I've discovered just a small portion over the last 25 years or so.
Wow. I was there's an academic wrote a book about Puer and the Tea Horse Road several years ago, and recorded some video footage and sort of mini documentaries that went along with. I managed to find not long ago, and it's 2.5 hours or so of a Sunday afternoon that I think was very well spent. It was just. It's just the watching them, steaming the leaves and then putting them into these the bags, shaping the cakes and letting them dry. Then brilliant stuff.
Yeah, it's wonderful to be able to see that. And even if one hasn't traveled to those regions or can't travel for whatever reason. All you have to do is go online, pray, and search for poor tea making to learn about how it's processed. There is a true art form behind tea making, and especially behind the poor tea making.
Do you have some closing thoughts for our listeners?
I would say, tea is a wonderful beverage, but more than a beverage, it's an art form. So, if you haven't really dabbled into the art form aspect of tea, it's worth exploring. If you haven't asked the question, how fresh is my tea when you buy tea, that's worth asking. And certainly if you're buying it from a merchant, tell the merchant or ask the merchant to tell you about origin stories and where the tea came from and how were they able to purchase it. So those are all things that I would encourage your listeners to ask if they haven't been asking.
Virinder Chawla from Tao of Tea, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
That was a conversation with Virinder Chawla, founder of the Tao of Tea in Portland, Oregon. That was only part of our interview, and we never even got to tea preparation, tea ceremonies, the history, the East India Company, the Opium Wars, Robert Fortune. We'll be looking at tea again in a future installment. For now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. You've been listening to Free Culture Radio. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. I want to thank my guest, Virinder Chawla, from the Tao of Tea. A big thank you to everyone out there fighting for civil rights, human rights, and social justice. And thanks especially to you, dear listener, for your support. You make it all worth it. Free Culture Radio is a volunteer production for Community Radio and syndicated via the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network's Audio Port Service. Theme music for Free Culture Radio was composed and performed by Tom Nickel and Four Dimensional Nightmare. Free Culture Radio is available as a podcast or direct download. Find links at the website kboo.fm/freeculture. We'll be back in a month to continue our examination of drugs, drug cultures, and the influence of drugs on society. Thanks again for listening. This is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long!